very excited to be here, and we'll talk a little bit about product management, product strategy, but even before that, I'll talk about my background, maybe 1 minute out of 45 minutes or 30 minutes, whatever we have today, and then we'll have Q&A at the end. But before we jump into product stuff and all that great stuff, I just want to talk about a defining moment in my life, and it happened. Actually, I know the exact date, August 1st, 2010. It was 2:38 a.m., and I'll tell you why. So, to give you some understanding of what we do, so Y Media Labs, we are a product strategy and engineering and design studio. We're based out of Redwood City, and we work with other brands to create products with a super lasting impact. So I started the company in 2009, and back then, iPhone was a very new thing, App Store was an extremely new thing, and we were just helping a startup called Montessorium to bring Montessori style of teaching on iPad. And the app was extremely simple. It was about, A would slide over, the app would talk to the kid would trace A, and then would be B, C, D. Extremely simple, but this was the first time someone actually leveraged the capability of touch on iPad, because, and we pushed the app on the App Store. This was app number 54. This was that time, right? And pushed the app on the App Store, and in 48 hours, got this email. I love what you're doing. Thank you. Let me know if we can help. Best team. I was like, there's no way this is true. Someone is playing around with me. We responded back. He responded again in 2 hours. That don't worry about critics who were criticizing us of bringing Montessori School of Teaching on technology, which was iPad. Just keep focusing on what you do, and you'll prove the critics wrong. So this was the defining moment, and this was the moment when it was building apps was a hobby, which converted into a business. So that's to give you some flavor of when I started the company and what happened. And I can promise you, there's no slide in this presentation which is as interesting as this one. It's all going to go downhill from this. So as I said, My Media Labs, we help brands build products which has a lasting impact. So for instance, we work with different brands like Apple, PayPal, Home Depot, Staples, North Face, and then a bunch of startups here in the Valley. And one of the key things we are focused on is how can we move the business needle there, whether it's increasing revenue, increasing consumer acquisition, conversion, or even like launching a brand new product. Worked with Apple on something very cool. This was 2 years ago on their research kit project. This was about how to revolutionize medical research. So these are just some of the things we work on. And talking about impact, so far we have worked with 24 Fortune 500 companies and a bunch of startups here in the Valley. Some of the products we have worked on has done more than $60 billion in transactions. And the products we have designed, developed, has touched 300 million users. And we are close to 240 people and based out of Redwood Shores. Now I'm going to deep dive into product strategy, product management, and I'll start with assumptions are deadly, right? Like whenever we do brainstorming with different brands or different startups, everybody has their own list of opportunities which they are trying to go after, and which is based on certain assumptions. And what I've seen is in the past that if you just go in without validating your assumptions, I think your journey would be extremely painful. How many here are familiar with Lean part of the methodologies break. And it's, you know, some of these things are definitely related to that. And early experiments can save you a lot of pain. And what I'm referring to is, before you even start designing and assuming that there's a huge need for the product you're about to build, launch, and get excited, I think there's some very simple experiments which sometimes, what I've seen is with big brands, it works a little different compared to startups, because big brands already have a solid track record of users, which startups do not have the luxury of. And some of the tactics which we have used successfully in the past is, you know, pushing the product out of product on, creating a landing page, signing up users beforehand, and showing the pictures and the vision of what the product is. And understanding the demand which exists in the market before you go out and build something. Just to give you an example, right? Like, Dropbox, when it was started by Drew Houston, what he did, clearly at this point it feels like it's a no-brainer. Like, you know, I can't believe nobody did that before Dropbox, right? But when he started this, he just put on Dropbox.com, like, something coming, just register, and he released a video. And that video just showed how you can access files on your computer, on your phone, on the go. And overnight, he registered 100,000 users, you know, on his list who are interested to try the product. So even before he just went and like built the product, he knew there was a demand. For instance, Zappos, same thing. Like, this was, I think, in 99 or early 2000. The founders were like, it's so, I think it's so important before, like, we go out and build a website and invest in the whole supply chain infrastructure and the retail management solution and all that, why not try this idea of whether people will buy shoes online? And what they did, they literally went to the store, clicked pictures, put it on the site, and whenever someone bought something, they rushed to the store, bought those shoes, and shipped them, right? Like, such simple experiment you can do just to validate what you're thinking is what people want. I mean, Y Combinator talks about this. The biggest reason why product fails is you build something nobody wants. Or like, and I talk about this like with our customers is, you know, when you build something which is a vitamin, that's not good enough. You gotta build. You know, it's like you need immediate get gratification that solves the problem right now rather than good to have. So in enterprise software, are you talking like as a startup or as a startup? So that's exactly my next question.
If you don't mind, repeat the question, they won't answer the question.
His question is, how do things differ in an enterprise software as a service? So, I would say that, you know, a lot of these tactics I talked about, which was, you know, having a landing page, buying ads, you know, buying stuff, like putting stuff on product hunt, and even doing keyword research on Google. I would say with enterprise software, especially when the user who's buying and the person who's writing the check and somebody else is approving, you know, they're a different chain. In that case, it is very important to actually go and talk to them. Like, that's like the number one thing you should do before like going out and doing anything. And this is exactly what I'm hinting at. And before we design anything, this is such a big deal in our company that when we work with home people, we went out and at 7 a.m. at the Home Depot local store, and their target audience was contractors, you know, who build houses and all that. And there are two kinds of target audience. One is contractor professionals, and one is consumers. But this was very much targeted towards contractors. And one of the challenges we were facing was there's a pro contractor app, and then there is a regular consumer app. the executives of Home Depot were like, should we merge it? Why keep it separate? And the feedback which we got from the pro, you know, consumers were that they have a very special use case which only contractors, you know, would have. So we, you know, kept it two different products. And I can give you like so many examples. Like for instance, you're working with L'Oreal right now, and one of the obvious things, like, and their target audience was professional hairstylists. And one of the obvious things is, you know, you gotta put all your hair products online and on mobile, on web, everywhere as a native app, and you know, you will sell more, and that would be like a obvious, I think, number one use case for L'Oreal to do. But what we found out after, you know, doing a lot of customer research and all that was their number one pain point was not actually buying on the phone, was actually referring to professional videos so that they can learn about hairstyling and all that. So that was the number one thing we solved before like putting the entire catalog on the phone. And good product managers answer tough questions. And I'm not going to go into like seven different tactics, strategies of product management, but I'll deep dive into one particular strategy, which I feel is just industry-wide pretty popular. And I'm sure some of you guys have felt this at work, where when you're designing a product, you have a list of features, and the biggest challenge you face is how you prioritize it. You know, there's always a lot more things to do than the capacity of your team or the money or the time you have. So how would you prioritize it? And this is what I'll deep dive into in this presentation. And here's how like we use this very effectively. Like sometimes, you know, we work with these brands, you know, VP's boss's boss is gonna come up with like some random idea, and you know, we would and they would like strongly stress on like why they feel this is a great idea. But when we tell them that the data shows something different, I think there are very few people who argue against the data. That's a great way, you know, to convince people and not get into like this back and forth of who's right and who's wrong. Who all have experienced this? I just would love to know, like, where you're designing a product and you just don't have enough resource and you just have to prioritize. And this is a typical product management challenge, you know. It's
the senior dogma gets in the way of the actual development of an adequate solution to the problem. That happens almost every day.
Exactly. It's whether you're Apple or whether you're a startup, you know, it happens to everybody.
I call it the Dilbert boss situation.
All right, so the model I was referring to was Kanno model, and in this, what I'm trying to explain is there is one axis, which is the customer satisfaction, which talks about if you introduce a feature, how happy the customer will be, from frustrated to delighted. And the other axis is, I'm referring to functionality, but it pretty much means, you know, the time, the money, the resource, the investment which goes into building the product. So these are the two axes, and we'll go through different, you know, permutation combinations, presentations in a moment here. So this is, have you guys heard of Kanno model, by the way? I'm just wondering. This is a very, I think, typical way of doing analysis on like which feature to invest more and which feature to let go of, how to prioritize pretty much. So there are a few different curves you can see. So one is the feature which is the most attractive. And by that, what I mean is you are beating expectation of the consumer. And I'll just give you a few examples. When iPhone was launched, I remember this moment clearly. 2007, Steve Jobs on stage announced this first time ever. You know, there's iPod, there's browser, and then phone. You know, all packaged together. And it was an unbelievable breakthrough at that point, which probably didn't feel like at that point in time, but clearly now it feels like it was clearly a big breakthrough. So I would say, you know, that is a very attractive kind of like a product for any user, because it never happened, because they're never expected, because they were used to feature phones or Blackberries or not really touch. Few more examples, like, I don't know if you guys used iPhone 3GS. You know, it's like the GPS chip was introduced the first time then, and from then on, you don't have to write your current location. You just do like current location and picks up your current location. And that was such an aha moment. Some of the other things, like for instance, Uber, you know, on demand. Now clearly, Uber doesn't feel like a big deal today, but when it was launched, it was like on demand, you don't have to call in cab early, you sit in the cab, you have like water, and the driver is not smelling, and you know, all that stuff. You're like, wow, can't believe it. So that's what I would categorize as like attractive. Second is performance. Performance is very simple, where the user is delighted with as you put in more investment, like, and particular features like, you know, having a bigger phone. Like, sure, people want it, but nobody gets like thrilled about that stuff, you know.
So if I'm reading this chart right,
yeah,
you have infinite satisfaction, but with an almost capped level of functionality, and then you have infinite functionality, but you'll never reach even a baseline, a zero degree of satisfaction, because you're just continuously adding to the
exactly. So again, some of these models, I think more than taking it as a formula, I always take it as a guideline.
So where's the sweet spot?
And that's what I'll get to. That, you know, you're thinking ahead. And then so performance is like, you know, just having more storage space, bigger, faster, like the regular stuff, how the technology evolves. The next one is this indifferent line, which you're seeing, is like, these are features nobody cares about, but you'll be shocked. Like, in products, you see this as the maximum number of times repeated over and over again. And this one is like the must-be. Like, for instance, you know, you go to a hotel, and if the thermostat or the AC is not working, you'll complain. But if it's working, you'll never bring up that, oh, it's working great, because you expect it. We work with so many financial services, fintech companies, and we have done a lot of, like, analysis on this. And for instance, a financial services app would have checking balances. I mean, that's killing. If you don't have that, people will be pissed. But if you have that, they'll not be delighted, because you expect it. So that's this third, right? So these are the four things I'll just, you know, deep dive on. And what we did, and again, just to explain the model, each functionality, what you do is, you put it like, how does a customer feel if they have the feature, and how do they feel if they don't have the feature? And then these are the different options you have. I like it, I expect it, I don't care, I can live with it, I dislike it. And what you're doing here is pretty much, you can say, an attractive feature is a feature where the customer loves the feature or likes the feature, but, you know, they can live without it because they don't expect it. So that's how we define attractive. Must be, as I explained, you know, saying in ways where if you don't have it, people are pissed. If you have it, go ahead.
I have a question. So the common approach that you talked about, you were referring more to the feature. Could you talk about, because I haven't yet, something called RISE prioritization. I don't know the word of it.
Uh-huh.
which is more of a product. So even before you have features, you have to think about the overall product.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know whether you have looked at those, which means you have asked questions like, what's the reach, what's the impact, what's the effort required?
Yeah.
So can you talk more about that? Because I don't know, in the sense, features can, is more granular, but on
so
overall
product, I am referring to features, but, you know, let's say like, right after I explain this, I'm explaining this with how we are designing the backlog and how we are designing a product. I think the point will get clear at that point. How about that? Good? And then performance and indifference, I just explained this here. So in practice, right, like I'm giving you an example where here we are designing a product for a particular thing. And you can say this is a bank, this is a major bank, and their target audience is subprime customers or people with not such high income. That's their target audience, okay? And there was, and when you're designing a product, you know, you're thinking of a lot of functionality, features, all that stuff, and you, and that's where I think what we did, we applied this model, and we did a survey, and this survey was like filled out by 556 people, you know, in this target segment. And these were the five, and again, I'm super simplifying things here, just for the sake of presentation. So I just picked like five features, which will make the whole product, right? Check balance, which is the ability for a customer to just check balance. Money management is the ability for a customer to manage their expense, savings, budgeting, all that stuff. Investment management is, let's say your net worth is $100,000, how are you allocating it? You know, stocks, bonds, 401k, you know, all that stuff. Checking credit score. You know, like, 7 years ago, it used to be an attractive feature, and now it's given by default, like every bank does it. And in this, it's the ability for the customer to check their credit score and round up savings. I don't know if you've heard of Acorn. It's a startup. It's a very interesting startup, and what they're doing is they are rounding up the balance of every transaction to the, you know, whole dollar, and then taking few cents, few dollars out of every transaction and putting in a savings account. And depending on what plan you use, and you can actually put that, you know, as it grows over time, you can put that in any investment, and, you know, the whole idea is this is how you create savings. I'm actually an investor in Acorn, and they're doing extremely well, and this is the only thing they capitalize their whole business on. So these are some of the features, or I would say main functionality of a product for a bank. And I'll just go into what we did, and you know, in this, how did we drop a feature, how did we prioritize, and what were like table stakes, right? As I said, everybody has an opinion, you know, everybody and their mother and their brother, like, has an opinion, and you get into this challenge of how you prioritize without ruffling feathers. So, again, it's sometimes very hard to, like, explain this model in literally 20 minutes, but I'll try my level best here. So you can just imagine all the features are stacked here, and these are all the results we got out of, you know, surveying 556 users, right? And these, this MPA is must be performance, attractive, indifferent. And this is how we stacked up, you know, feature one has nine people said like it's must be. So whatever is the maximum feedback we are getting as a category, we are assigning that feature to that category. So feature one is getting assigned as a must-be category. And then feature two is assigned as a performance category here, right? Feature N, whatever that is assigned as an attractive category. So So this is how we did this exercise. And again, I'll say this one more time, that, you know, models are models. You should never take models as a formula. Like, these are all guidelines, and, you know, these are not formulas. So this is what we did here. And,
Another question. Can you clarify the difference between performance and attractive?
Yeah, absolutely. So performance is generally a feature or a functionality where the customer expects that to happen over time. For instance, you know, today you have 128 GB phone. Tomorrow you'll get 256, then you'll get 500. You expect it. You know, you're not getting, oh my God, I can't believe this happened. Because this is how technology works. So that's what a performance like feature needs, right? And you said must be or attractive?
Attractive
is when you're beating expectation. And I was referring to the iPhone. You know, when iPhone was launched, nobody expected that there will be a phone where you don't have to press buttons. You can just like touch and swipe and start interfacing. And that's what I would call like attractive, where you're beating expectation. But if you don't have that functionality, you're not like going crazy, right? That's the difference. Yeah, so reverse and questionable. So questionable comes to means pretty much what it means is, because you remember I talked about two questions you have. One is, if you have it, how would you feel? If you don't have it, how would you feel, right? So the ideal answer should be opposite of each other. But sometimes what happens, if the user is like, not really paying attention, they're just clicking here and there, you'll get conflicting answers. And that should be weeded out as like questionable, okay? So when you're yeah, go ahead.
How do you, in fact, I mean, if, how do you take care of the impact of cannibalism? Because if you say already a product is existing in the market, you're bringing another product. So your customer will always expect best one, but it can actually impact your revenue.
See, at this point, if you look at how some of the companies have done well, you have to be true to yourself. They're, at least my belief is, again, there's no perfect answer, that if you have to launch a product, and even if it cannibalizes your current product, you've got to launch it to keep up with the market. This is probably the number one reason why big companies go out of business. I'll just give you a great example. iPod was such a hot-selling device, okay? And then when Steve Jobs launched like iPhone, which is iPod, browser, and phone together, I mean, it was pretty obvious, I think, at that point, over time, iPod is going to go extinct, and that's what happened. But guess what? If as a company you don't make those decisions, you can never grow. I mean, iPhone is the anchor product today for Apple, right? Like, just an example.
Any other questions?
Reverse question.
Yeah, so reverse is exactly like what the question you're asking. The user wants exactly the opposite of that, right? That's what reverse is. And what will happen is, trying to come up with what would be a good example here. You can pretty much say that in questionable, you know, the user is for having the feature and for not having the feature, user is checking like, I like it, right? And it's questionable. In reverse, it's like, it's exactly the opposite, which means that,
You mean complementary feature?
You can say that in some ways, yes. You can say that. It's what it means is the feature that you are trying to go after, the user wants exactly opposite of it. You know, again, this is, I'm not being very exact.
So you measure that, like, do something and...
It's, and as I said,
you
know...
Before it's all the worst thing and, like, because in the journey of your apps, right,
what is the... happens all the time because, as I said, like, one of the things I think people don't understand, which is surprising, is like, no matter how much analysis you do, and you go to market with perfect analysis, you'll be surprised, okay? And this, what it does is it reduces the surprise. It doesn't like kill the surprise, you know? So I just want to be careful on like what these things are supposed to do. So some of these things, like for instance, I'm just trying to think, like, when, let's say, so Staples, okay? We went to market. Staples wanted to target like suburban malls. Staples is a brand, which is a small business brand, right? Like people go there to replenish paper, printer, all that stuff as a small business or a business owner. But Staples used to be 3 years ago, was the third biggest online shopping company in the world, right? Which was shocking. I couldn't believe it. And they were like, yes, that's true. After Amazon and after Walmart, I'm like, okay, you know? And then what happened was they launched this product for suburban malls because they wanted to target only replenishing, like, you know, in household, like what you use as Clorox and dishwashing liquid and all that. So you're not changing these things from week to week. You're ordering the same thing. So creating experience so that people can just order the same thing over and over again. So they had all the data to say that, you know, this would do really well, work really well. You know, it's like people asked for it and, you know, the survey, whatever they did. So from product standpoint, I think they were right. But where they went wrong was people don't associate doing such activity. Like at a suburban mall, I'm not going to go to like Staples to do these things, right? Even though there's a need. So, you know, the surprise was it was not the need which was a problem. It was more like
the concept
of Staples doing this. Exactly.
That's where Amazon breaks the mold, right?
Amazon has not broken the mold. They are like breaking every retailer right now. Like, I can't believe, like, we work with so many retailers. That's the number one competition.
Because they've taken that concept of one point and subscription, XYZ. I'm just amazed at how they can break the mold.
And
that's why it's the whole A to Z.
One of the biggest things that Amazon is doing so well today. Like today, if I want something, I'm just going to Amazon app and ordering. I'm not doing price comparison. I'm not doing all that.
Even though they're not the cheapest.
Even though now they are not the cheapest, yes. But, you know, they've just created that mind share today. And so next is, actually, you know, I'd like to ask a question now. So these are the five features, right? I'll just ask, which feature do you think was the indifferent feature, right? Like all of this. So we have these four options, right? These four categories. Attractive must be performance indifferent. Okay? So what do you think here is the indifferent feature?
Check it.
Yes, it is. It's actually investment management, and I'll tell you why. Because investment management is a great category for high net worth individuals. They love it, they want it, but people who are at a subprime level, they are, number one, they don't have the luxury of investment management, and number two, they don't understand, so they don't want to like go in that direction, right? So these are some of the things. See, like these models show you, like what, according to your target audience, what is important and what is not, right?
Plus, actually, the investment management is attached to other institutions instead of actual banks.
That is true, but these days, I think one of the strategies we are seeing, banks are actually having the capability to connect to other, like E-Trade account and your 401k account and all that stuff. Because every bank is trying to own the customer completely. Yes.
From the vendors.
Exactly. So this was the result. So as you can see, Roundup Savings was the number one attractive feature for this target audience, because saving was such a big pain point that they felt this, because Roundup Savings again is not an expected feature. You know, it's something, you know, they would love to see. Money management was second, which was on the lines of you know, how they manage their expense, because the biggest challenge which they're facing today is like between savings and expenses, how do they manage that? And then why credit score is attractive? You can say that like credit score is almost at an attractive level today, because still people like to get their credit score checked. And close to 7 years ago, it used to be a paid service, and now it's free. The indifferent, as I said, investment, you know, they don't care about. I was actually surprised that, you know, people picked investment management as an indifferent functionality, because I deeply care about that. But, you know, here the target audience was different. And then must be, as I said, is a feature where nobody gets delighted by check balance. But if you don't put this in a banking app, they'll get super mad. Right? Yeah.
Would you actually consider doing an experiment with perhaps the same thing, instead of calling it investment management, some other terms? Because, I mean, they were really caring about savings, so there is an implication that they really do care about.
No, so we actually did not put investment management as a term. I am, like, putting this term to just explain my point. The question was, like, very well framed what it means, right? Like, managing stocks, bonds, 401k, all that stuff. But that's actually a good point. Depending on how you frame the question, that can influence the answer. Yeah.
Is it something
So this exercise which we did was the fact that, like, you know, we work with PayPal, American Express, First Republic Bank. This is just for us, just to understand the business. So we work with Credit One Bank, which is probably the second biggest bank in the subprime segment. And this was an exercise just for internally, like, to understand where the market is. And this is where, you know, how we prioritize at the end. You know, the question I started with, how do you prioritize, you know, set of features? And this is where we ended up, where Roundup Savings was very high, because this is where you can create customer delight. Money management was very important. Check credit score was reasonably attractive. Check balance has to be there. And investment management was the feature which we dropped, right? Like, you know, it doesn't matter. And even like based on this, like, I was kind of surprised that Roundup Savings was such a big deal, by the way. And now it makes sense, because Acorn, which is a startup just based on this, they're doing pretty well. So this is a good example of, you know, how you apply the common model. And any other questions? Yeah.
So if a feature is classified as a must be, like how check balance was in this case, wouldn't you build that first? Wouldn't that be a dog move parent?
So you are right. So the must be, so basically, when I say maintenance, what I mean is that this feature already existed, so we are not going to like invest more in this feature. That's what it meant. But we are not going to like invest in this, and we are going to invest in this because this is where the delight is, because this is more like a feature which is checked the box. Once it's there, it's there. You know, if you invest more, don't expect you'll get that delight or something. So that's.
When was this survey?
This was done like 4 months ago or something.
And if this was for a new product, tax balance would be on top, right? Because you're running.
Absolutely. And always, like, here's another thing. I think I forgot to probably make this point clear. Any attractive feature, the foundation of that is must-be features. If you don't have must-be features, then you cannot make attractive features. You know,
there's no foundation.
There's no foundation. So you're right, right? Like, you start with must-be, and then you get into the attractive side.
This almost goes down to the basis of the core values of the firm.
So basically, when you're doing an ideal development of a product, one suggestion that you follow from the Kanban model is that you create a balance of, you know that there's a particular amount of resource you are going to invest in the attractiveness of the design. At the same time, you know, proportionately you have to invest in, like, say, must-be features.
And see, if you see here that investment management feature, like, this proven means that it was dropped. And if, let's say, if we had not done this, right, and if we had, like, oh, the investment management makes sense, people want to know how to invest, that feature would take so much energy to build because banks would rely on third-party services, you know, for that. Integration and all that is a big, like, time investment.
Hey Ashish, moving forward, when people ask questions, could you repeat the question to pick up the audio?
Oh, okay. Well, too late.
Moving forward. Thanks.
Questions, comments, concerns? So the question is, how did we pick the people who would do the survey? So we used Mechanical Turks, Amazon Mechanical Turks, to do the survey. And then we have tried Google survey as well. Mechanical Turks is generally works well for, like, broad-based, you know, questions and needs, like, you know, this kind of stuff. It's pretty broad-based. I think Google works relatively better when you have a very niche segment. That's what we experience. Yeah.
Great presentation.
What's the
C aspect of it for now? To be the aspect, perhaps enterprise software, consumers don't see the software.
Mm-hmm.
They really don't care. People who really do care are the people inside the company, because A, it adds value because something's automated, or B, it reduces their cost, helps them get the market share, distinguishes them all behind the scenes without actual support features that might be used by consumers. How do you test those? I mean, how do you create a You can't possibly
have a
mechanical
part. Yeah, for enterprise, you can't go to... Because the thing is, for enterprise, you have a specific segment, right? Like, you are targeting, let's say, you know, let's say your product is, like, Concur.
Let's call it to Salesforce or whatever. Yeah.
Salesforce, great, right? Like, Salesforce is a product. My target audience is, like, sales managers, VP of sales organization for... looking to manage, you know, leads, their team, activity, pipeline, all that stuff. And that's, so that's where, like, you can use, you know, these Mechanical Turks. And because in Mechanical Turks, it's only mainly for consumers, right? Like, in this segment, I think you have to actually go after particular companies who are, like, on your target list and then, you know, approach them that way. And then, generally speaking, I would say what I have seen work well with startups is you sign some of them up early as, like, beta customers, and they help you, but you immediately give them some analysis for free, and, you know, they help you build a product, right? Like,
so you do have to build a product before you can even present to say, let me give it.
It is trickier in an enterprise segment, yes. Yeah.
Is the solution to that really not mining the data with that test enterprise group that you've given free sample access to the solution?
But then a lot of times...
I mean, you're not mining customer data, but you're mining some massive data. You're using, well, not metadata, but massive data. More like, and then you're building off that because you're looking for the enterprise, you know, what is the enterprise going to do with this data? And really, you have to go down to the end subject user. But if you're just, you want to not follow them, you look at the controls and see how they're actually querying the data, how they're searching, and what their outputs are. And then from there, you can start building the enterprise solutions.
So that can only happen once you have a critical mass of, you know, enterprise.
Right, because a lot of this stuff is custom tool for custom clients.
Exactly. So it's very hard, I think in enterprise, it's just harder to validate things early. So, because you just have to onboard, you know, a few users. Even to, what you, I totally understand what you're saying, but even to get to that point, you need critical mass.
You need critical mass of data.
Of data.
So it's almost like the back end for the enterprise level is to set up a consulting and solutions team for each enterprise client that takes it and build them the filters tools.
It's those apples. You can't just put some pictures on the website.
Exactly.
Pick up some shoes and that will cost you.
Yeah, maybe that's exactly what Zappos did, and then Accenture went around the hacker and started doing this sort of thing.
True, but that thing that was focusing, right? I mean, I can't say we're going to,
It's a little trickier than enterprise, but I would say that in enterprise, you just have to stay a lot closer to your end target customer. You know, you have to, like, get regular feedback, how things are going, this, that, and in consumer, I think you can do that by, in general, like,
versus an enterprise, you're almost embedded.
Yes.
I feel basically for enterprise, it's more important, this is what my opinion is, to understand the processes and certain things, how it works, and if there is anything for violation or improvement of the processes, and the idea is who else uses that process to understand, you know, to collect that information, how many people need it. And then basically go about, you know, addressing it. So consumers is very different because it's the general population.
Yeah. So I think one thing that you try to do both in B2C and B2B space is called customer development. And that's basically the customer research where you're trying to figure out, explore as to how their current life is, what their frustrations and emotions are, and how can possibly solve their problems that they currently have. And once you have done that, this is probably the next step when you have already found out what are some of the important things and you're trying to figure out what would they like them but also what is possible. When you go to a B2B customer, what you do there is you have explored those, you have identified what are different things that they want, and then you really do a value mapping to see if you provide this feature. I mean, B2B motivations are basically the cost reduction or the delivery day. And you really put some numbers onto that and see if that resonates with them. So you validate that, and that's how you start.
I'll tell you one tactic has worked really well for me. Is, you know, like, while you were growing the company, you know, obviously we are hiring a lot of people, and what happened was, during the interview process, even though, like, obviously the objective is to hire somebody, but when you are deep diving, let's say, you know, this person comes from retail industry or like enterprise, Salesforce, or somewhere like which is your target domain, you end up asking them questions and you end up learning so much about that industry that is shocking. Right? Like, just by interviewing candidates, you know, I'm like, I'm blown away by this, by the way. Anything else?
So when you're building a new product, obviously you can, you know, have too many ideas. Do you find that there's a particular threshold which you should stop yourself and say, let's go forward with, you know, 25 ideas or 50 ideas and test those first?
Absolutely. In fact, it's very hard. You should, you know, what we have seen is with, I'll just give you an example, Home Depot, right? Home Depot was, so we have been working with them over the past, I don't know, more than 1 year, and they just won the Omni-Channel Award for like how the experience is in-store versus how it's seamless with digital and in-store. And one of the key things, when we went in, we actually dropped the number of features they had, and that increased the engagement. And it was not about like more features, it's about triggering the right feature at the right place. You know, that was the key learning there. Absolutely, less is more.
Questions, comments?
Good. So here's my email. If you
guys have any other,
yes.
I have a question. It was a wonderful presentation.
Thanks.
So what is the main reason you decided to do a presentation?
You know, I met somebody from products, right? And they were like, "Hey, Sheesh, would love to have you here. If you can talk about product strategies and product best practices," I was like, okay. And just like that. And
Yep. That's the reason.
Absolutely.
Okay. The second question I have is,
Yeah.
Okay. So what is the defining attribute you will see? Hey, this guy will do the job. Mm. So what do you do the confidence defining attribute you will see they're going to write for?
So, you know, that's a great question. And one of the things like we particularly look for is
Thank you.
The question is, what do you look for as like the number one trait in product managers?
Yeah. Right? So if you're going to hire a product manager,
yeah.
What is the defining attribute of him that will trigger you to hire this guy who's doing the job?
Defining attribute of a potential product manager.
Yeah. Because you're hired.
Yeah. So I would say that early on, like I used to look for a lot of domain expertise, which is very important, especially like if you're, you know, if you go into like very complex problem solving, then domain expertise is very important. But in general, I would say the trait I look for particularly is curiosity, right? Like how curious you are to learn. And you know, some of the questions around like how did you solve the problem, even though you didn't have any knowledge, what did you do at that point, and you know, all those things. That's like really high in my list for product managers.
Oh, a few more questions.
Yeah.
So actually about your company, I didn't quite understand how does your company work. Does it work with product managers from your customers, or is it like the company is kind of outsourcing their product management to you guys?
So we work with the product managers of the company as well, but at the same time, when they're working with us, we are doing product strategy, we are doing user experience, we are doing the engineering. So pretty much like end-to-end, right? Like, for instance, we work with American Express, you know, their loyalty program. We design the product, we build the product, and then we maintain the product. But even before that, we would go in and tell them, let's say they have a preconceived notion and we all agree with something based on these models and data, then we would tell them to change the direction as well.
Okay. So what you're saying is not only did you tell the truth, not only did you tell them the design of the product,
yeah,
but you actually built the product for them.
Yes, correct.
Okay.
So that's what we do.
Okay.
Anyway. Yeah.
So I have a question around
marketing.
So if you get
so the question is, the question is that I talked about creating landing pages and different strategies and also doing user surveys. So what is the sequence of steps that you should take?
And also, so is it depend on the product that you're putting on the market, or is you always do that?
So generally speaking, some of the strategies like, you know, Google keyword analysis, all that, it works a lot more in favor of consumer products. But going and meeting customers is kind of something which is the most important thing in this in experimentation phase, I would say. Whether you're enterprise, whether you're consumer, I would say like staying close to the customer is the biggest key out of all the different strategies I talked about.
So again, I can question about landing pages, isn't that this maybe not as useful?
No, those things are very useful. I'm not saying it's not. It's just that sometimes you can get false signal as well. If you're not talking to your potential customer and you're just doing landing pages and keyword research and, you know, just that, and not really talking to real users. I think the insight you get by doing everything is, I think, the real thing rather than just depending on one thing. That's what
if you're doing some niche product,
yeah,
and it's hard to get the specific users, but what would you advise to get those users?
I mean, when you're doing niche product, you just have to, like, I guess, target your niche, you know. One thing which we do is, like, in that case, you just have to, you know, incentivize your target audience to, you know, come in, do surveys, and it may cost like a few hundred dollars sometimes, and it's not as cheap as just doing like surveys on the campus.
Can you share a little bit
of
experience about building the mobile app and how does that work after the insights?
So I can go into that. I'll not go into the specifics, right? But I'll just generalize it, right? Like, so without going into details of like what did we actually found with PayPal, I'll just say that where we come in is we would not just start building before we validate what we are building is right. Like, that is a very big deal for us. So a lot of times, you know, you just focus on starting designing and starting engineering without really validating, you know, why you are doing. I think that is the biggest thing you focus on.
All right. Unfortunately, guys, we only have time for one more question, and I'm going to ask it. I'm so sorry.
Laura has dropped the mic.
No, you're going to drop the mic for us. So my final question for you is, we have a lot of aspiring product managers in the room. What is, like, one piece of advice for you to them in their transition process?
So when you say aspiring, you mean like they want to become this thing in the near future, right? Like,
yes.
So I would say one thing which has really helped people find a lot of product management job is, like, if you're passionate about something, talk about it, right? Like, don't focus too much on your resume. You know, like, people don't really read resumes. Like, focus on building a profile about yourself on LinkedIn, social media, and even, let's say, you know, you're very interested in Amazon. You know, you want to be a product manager there. What I would strongly recommend you guys is go out and, like, engage with a potential product manager or leader in Amazon on LinkedIn, on Twitter, and start having that conversation there rather than, like, going on jobs.amazon.com and uploading your resume, because they get like hundreds of resumes every day. You know, that would be my advice, I guess.
All right, well, another round of applause for Ashish.